or contacts uncomfortable. Yep. Until you have processes in place, just like you do with screening pressure, looking into the retina, patients don't know. And so, and they're really interested in making those things better. Once they find out, they're like, whoa, wait a minute, this is not normal. This is not how my eyes are supposed to feel. And so he was referred over here. He came today and he goes, thank you. You know, I've been dealing with this for years and I never knew why. And I definitely didn't know that there was something that I can do about it. Right. And so I like those anecdotes and those stories.
Hello and welcome to Crystal Podcast on iCode Media. Today, I had a great conversation with Dr. Janelle Davison. She and I met about a year ago, a little over a year ago, at a retina panel, and I liked her immediately. I wanted to have her on for a while. She's been doing big things and developing her practice, and so it's been a little bit of a delay, but I'm super excited to share our conversation with you. Please enjoy our conversation, and as always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast, write a review, share it with your friends, and support those who support us. My patients with macular degeneration want clear and succinct recommendations from me related to products and solutions that can benefit their long-term ocular health and vision. To do this for my patients, I need to be confident that what I'm recommending will have a benefit to them. And that's why my supplement of choice is MacuHealth. MacuHealth is specifically formulated and clinically proven to rebuild and maximize macular pigment over a lifetime. This results in enhanced visual performance and aids in the treatment and prevention of age-related macular degeneration. I've discussed carotenoid absorption on this podcast with Dr. Nolens and Stringham, and MacuHealth uses a patented process called micro-micelle technology. And this technology is clinically proven to increase carotenoid concentrations at the target tissue and deliver the highest level of bioavailability studied to date. MacuHealth has been great for my patients. We really feel like we have the ability to help those patients in all categories of macular degeneration. If you're not utilizing MacuHealth for your patients, check it out for yourself by contacting your MacuHealth representative. Emerging presbyopes and emmetropic presbyopes can be tricky. These patients want and need additional help at near, but they can be resistant to solutions that create even mild distance blur. The MyDay multifocal lens has been great for our presbyopic patients. It allows those patients to transition into a multifocal more easily and more comfortably. And we've had this lens for long enough now that we have been able to see the simple and how simple the adaptation can be when adjusting from lower AD designs to higher AD designs. When prescribing MyDay contact lenses, you can feel confident about your environmental impact because for every MyDay contact lens sold in the United States, CooperVision's partner, Plastic Blank, collects and converts an equal amount of ocean-bound plastic through their global network. MyDay multifocal contact lenses will provide your patients with a great quality of vision and comfortable lens wearing experience, all while making a difference in our environment. So if you haven't started utilizing MyDay multifocal in your practice, I'd encourage you to reach out to your CooperVision representative to get started. I'm really excited for you, Janelle. You know, it's kind of weird because you're probably like, Chris, how do you know all about me? You know what I mean? But like, just for the audience, you know, the one of the things that was super cool for me is when we were on that retina panel with Pete Kehoe, and I don't recall, you don't have to bring up his name, but I don't recall the other gentleman's name who was with us. But what was kind of shocking to me, so Jim, who set all that up, Jim Greenwood, he was smart about, you know, who he was picking. Like, clearly Pete, you and I had one perspective, but he wanted another perspective from sort of the doc that like does not want anything to do with eye disease. And I was shocked. Like, it was very surprising to me, his position. I don't know the exact words, but I articulated a point that said, look, I want the retinal surgeons that I use. I want to know what you're going to do when you're going to do it. And so when I send you, I expect that this is going to happen, you know? Mm-hmm. And he was like, no, I'm not the expert in this. I want you to, and it's like, and you immediately jumped in and said, no, I think like Chris thinks. So immediately we had a connection, right?
Yeah.
So that's for the listeners. And then Janelle, it's been really fun to watch kind of what you're doing. You were on my radar, and it's been fun over the last year to kind of see how you're building your practice and growing your practice.
Is that better lighting?
It's great.
Okay. Yeah. I turned it just a little bit. Sorry.
Yeah. That's okay. So the so I say all that to say, like, you're just launching. So you've got a practice already.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are you launching the dry eye center within your existing practice, or is this a different facility?
So I did that in 2018, and now it's grown. So I'm taking that out, and it has its own separate space now.
Okay.
Because it was getting a little bit cumbersome for me with primary care. And then there's a certain level of experience I want the patient to have. And I didn't feel like they can have that within a primary scope practice. And so now this, what I just opened and what I'm running behind with today is a dedicated, so it's like I had like evals and treatments and stuff today, is a dedicated dry institute with the focus on, you know, dry eye, MGD, Demodex, Sjogren's dry eye, like everything. And so that way I can just have that dedicated time frame with those patients. But you know, they take a lot of time, a lot of counseling. And so that's my jam. That's what gives me joy. This is my 18th year. So that's what's keeping me happy about seeing patients.
Yeah. You know, I think it's important when you think about dry or burnout in physician burnout and optometry burnout, it's, the ones that don't typically burn out, they find areas that kind of they can expand and grow into. I'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, so you started looking at ocular surface disease within your primary care practice. And you and I, our approach to primary care practice is generally, I think, pretty similar.
Yeah.
Start with describing your approach to comprehensive care and primary eye care and how you view that in terms of the total patient. One of the challenging things with patients is when they invest in a really high quality pair of glasses and customized lenses, it can be challenging to keep those lenses clean, keep them scratch free, smudge free. And so we now have the ability with Crizal Sapphire HR lenses to offer our patients the best in class anti-reflective coating in a way that is really high resistance so that they're not having to care for their lenses as much as when those lenses are caring for them. So remember that you can provide patients that best in quality, best in class transparency, clarity, durability, and UV protection in a single Crizal coating. If you want to learn more about Crizal Sapphire HR, contact your Essilor account executive or visit EssilorPro.com/Crizal. The most common questions I get include, what ophthalmological codes or evaluation and management codes should I use? What ICD-10 codes do I need to bill with this CPT code? What CPT codes can be billed together and what can't? And my favorite, how do I manage a patient who has diabetes who comes in for a quote-unquote routine eye exam? These questions really highlight the confusion and uncertainty that serves as a daunting hurdle for providers, makes it more challenging for them to care for their patients and provide those patients with the best opportunity for a lifetime of ocular health and clear vision. That's why we built Eye Code Education for this specific purpose. Our mission is to provide optometrists with resources to help you understand disease states, revenue cycles, and billing and coding so that you can put that on autopilot and truly care for your patients. Check out eyecodeeducation.com. That's E-Y-E-C-O-D-E education.com. We've developed a premier billing and coding bundle that includes all of our billing and coding resources in one place. We also have a 10% discount code just for listeners of this podcast. Enter the coupon code EYECODEMEDIA22 at checkout. We'd love to work with you. Check out iCodeEducation.com.
We take care of the whole patient, right? So even though I'm an eye doctor, I'm responsible for one organ, but in school, we have to know about the entire body, right? And so that is my approach to primary care. In the clinic, we are, of course, assessing you for glasses and contact lenses. But at the same time, I'll tell patients, you're here because you want updated glasses or contacts. I'm here to confirm that your eyes are healthy, right? So when I first started my practice 14 years ago, initially private practice, when you first open up cold, most of your patients are healthy. They're coming in glasses and contact lenses, but you have to be savvy enough to know each demographic, what their risk factors are, have tests and things in place to be able to assess that their eyes are overall healthy and all they need is glasses and contact lenses. And so that's how I approach. I come in, I'm always screening, like we screen for glaucoma with eye pressure. And we have retinal bundles. I have screenings that I do for dry eye. I mean, I'm always looking to make sure that in addition that you're seeing as best as you can, because I can refract good. It drives me nuts now. My 18 years in it, but I'm a really good refractionist. I don't hardly have any remakes. But at the same time, I need to know that your eyes are healthy. And so that's how I approach it. From the age that I see, you know, there's been a big transformation in how I care for patients. When I first started, I had a lot of kids. I was doing a lot with the county where I was one of the secondary screening sites. And I think that's what really kind of burned me out, because I'm not a pediatric doctor, but if you're good with kids, parents, I mean, had kids coming from everywhere. I had special needs patients. It was rock and roll in my practice. I was seeing like 20, 25 patients a day. I took every plan, including some of your state Medicaid plans. But that was a lot on a new business owner. I had two young children at home. And I was like, well, how can I kind of transform my practice where I'm still giving that complete care, but find something that I focus on? And dry eye, which I'm a dry eye sufferer, what started become my passion. And so at the time when I really started doing this in 2015, maybe, we didn't have a lot. It was mostly topical. And then we had a few diagnostic and screening tests that we can do. I remember I reached out to some of the now big Atlanta, dry eye doctors in the Atlanta area, Josh Johnson. I think I sent a couple emails. I talked to him on the phone. And then I really just started focusing on my database, you know, and patients that were coming in. How can I screen them for dry eye just like I do for glaucoma, cataracts, and retina issues? And then when I see something, prescribe, right? And then as other therapies came about to be able to treat the patients, I slowly implemented those things into my practice. And then the whole cosmetic and aesthetic part came along. And once you're managing dry eye, patients start to ask you those cosmetic and those aesthetic questions. So I had to get versed, right? Even though I wear makeup, some of those things, I was like, you know what? I'm not sure. Because I will research and they'll say, well, where can I get it, Dr. Davidson? And I'm like, oh, I actually have to give you a place to get it. And then I had a patient say, why don't you have that stuff? And then I said, well, I don't have an answer. No one said I couldn't have it. I have a whole retail. I can sell what I want to sell. And so I started implementing those things. And then I got a separate dedicated space. I had the whole esthetician. And it really brought joy back into me seeing patients every day. But when you get so specialized, the 20 patients a day gets difficult. So then I had to kind of just redefine what my demographic was, what my passion was, some assurances I had to let go so that I can condense my day. So now I see about 14 max in my primary care setting. So that allows me to kind of make sure I'm assessing and looking. And then when I see things, I'm referring, right? And so, and that's where we are right now. I use an example today. I had a patient that said he's normally going to get glasses and contact lenses. His eyes have always irritated him, but none of his doctors ever asked him how his eyes were feeling or screening for that. And I have an associate who I'm training as well. And he said it wasn't until he had exam with my associate at the time that started asking those specific questions about how his eyes felt. And he goes, yeah, I have that. That's every day. That's been going on for years. But, you know, I get glasses and contacts and no doctors ever said anything.
Yeah, they're not aware that it's a problem. You know, you ask a patient, you ask them, like, how do your eyes feel? Oh, they're fine. And how do they look? They're red. Yeah, they're always kind of red. That's normal. Or they'll say, you know, your eyes burn when you close them after you've been on a computer all day. Yeah, but that, you know, like, they just assume that that's just kind of baked into the cake, you know, and it's supposed to feel like that.
Or contacts uncomfortable. Yep. And so you have processes in place, just like you do with screening pressure, looking into the retina. Patients don't know. And so, and they're really interested in making those things better. Once they find out, they're like, whoa, wait a minute. This is not normal. This is not how my eyes are supposed to feel. And so he was referred over here. He came today and he goes, thank you. You know, I've been dealing with this for years and I never knew why. And I definitely didn't know that there was something that I can do about it. Right. And so I like those anecdotes and those stories.
You know, what's so amazing to me, I say this all the time. So within iCode, we call it comprehensive optometry simplified. And the reason I say this is that we've worked with lots of practices all over the country. And what we've learned is that the practices that do what you're talking about really well arrive at what we teach, not because they all learn from us, but what we've seen is like, okay, well, you've sort of figured out there's prevalence, right? So like you've valued your services appropriately. You've said, look, I have access to patients that have, I can know what they ought to have based on prevalence data. Yes. So you didn't just memorize prevalence data to regurgitate it on a board exam. You memorized it so that you know when a patient walks into your practice, what you're expecting to find. And if you don't find those things, it's great for the patient. But if you're not finding them in mass, right, or at a certain percentage, then you're probably not doing your job, or your patient population is really unique. But that's unlikely. Yeah. You know, that's very unlikely. And then you figure out, okay, well, if I really want to detect these things, then I'm going to ask this question and that question, and I'm going to do this screening test and that screening test, and then I'm going to follow a protocol. Where it's not all like, I love that you said, well, I'm not going to build this. What I heard you say was we first started treating ocular surface disease with drops. And then you sort of had patients that you couldn't fix with drops. Yeah. So it was like, now I got to take the next step or I got to take the next step. And so one of the things we teach people and what you did there was you managed the disease. Mm-hmm. The widget in that whole scenario was not tear care or LipiFlow or an IPL. The widget was the doctor-patient relationship. And you've got to figure out how do you make this patient who's coming back and saying, hey, Dr. Davison, this is better, but I'm still having problems.
Yes.
And so then you have to figure out like, and then you're forced to figure out like, okay, well, if I'm going to be the dry eye expert that I think I am, that I believe I am, then I got to figure out a way to solve this patient's problem. And so what you've done is exactly what we see practices, and that's what we teach, is there's people that can do it without us, but we basically teach that exact same protocol. Like you follow these steps and it's just rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. So who taught you that? Did you learn it? Did you find it by like Jake Johnson? Did he teach you that? Or did you just sort of like intuitively know this is how we have to do that?
Yeah, I mean, Josh Johnson was a good about, you know, yeah, at the time Josh, he was starting, you know, dry as well. And I think all we had in front of us was drops. But I always know you got to have a process, a protocol, right? I'm very systematic, even with just my check-in process. You know, my staff, they jokingly say, you know, I'm like spastic type, whatever you want to call it. I can function in chaos. And so everything has a protocol, right? And so dry eye disease state management is no different. And so once I have a protocol, so I read, I go to lectures, I did everything to learn about the disease itself, what I should expect. And as the treatments and things advance, I stayed on top. And so then I will see where those things will fit into my protocol. And I just get really fixated on this is what I do. I follow step by step by step. There's certain things that I gather. And then I look and see where you fall in that. And as things advance for me to help better diagnose you, because the diagnosis is where it is. A lot of doctors, like you said, they want to jump into the treatment.
Yeah.
But they don't have a clear-cut diagnosis. So I really focus on my ability to diagnose the patient and then my ability to troubleshoot the patient, right? The treatments are great. I have all those things and I add those things when my troubleshooting
they're awesome. Work. Yeah.
You know, like, okay, I need something else to add to this toolbox because troubleshooting this patient, what I have in front of me is not enough, right? And if I can't get it, then I'm the doctor, I will refer. So before I had a form of thermopulsation, I would get to the point where I'm like, you know, I need this patient, needs something else. I don't hold them there and let them get worse. I had a colleague up the street and I said, hey, I'm going to send my patient to you. You have LipiFlow. I think this is what they need. You know, I'll send the notes. And she said, sure. And once I'm done, I'll send you a report and send the patient back. And so then as I started to grow my base, I said, hey, I can now get those things in the office myself. I have enough. Mm. I'm confident in my diagnostic ability. I'm confident in my troubleshooting and I'm missing something. And so I just kept going. It's like, because I hear doctors, they're like, I'm going to go buy this. And it's like, well, okay, well, what's your process?
It's totally right. No, it's totally right. It's like you. So again, like this is not there to belittle other doctors. Yeah. It's just the and I know that's not what you're aiming to do. It's just a constant battle where what happens when doctors do this is they go to a meeting, they hear that Dr. Davison, wow, she's awesome. I'm going to get vectored thermal pulsation. I'm going to get an IPL, and then they buy the widget. And they try to fix everything with that widget and it won't. It won't fix everything. And so then they get frustrated and they're like, well, that doesn't work. And then they don't know. They didn't diagnose enough. They didn't look enough at to as to what factors are making the patient feel the way they are feeling.
Yeah.
And then the patient comes back and they say, well, I'm no better. And it's like, well, wait, if I looked at enough things and I accurately diagnosed and kind of stratified the likely treatments that are going to be the best for that patient, then I can also look at those indicators. So things like osmolarity and Flamidrime, things like lactoferrin. Now I see that you're now
bringing that in. Yeah,
so
I'm in the process of doing
that
right now.
You'll love it. I'll tell you, we've had it now. We've been doing it now for a week.
Really?
And so what is really cool is like it explains so much of like what my intuition was on a patient that was going to do well with this or that treatment.
Okay.
And now it's just like, oh yes, that's why they did well with this. So my point in saying all of that is that, you know, you have those patients that come back in. What could be really frustrating is if I went all in on a widget and that patient comes back and like didn't help, but well, then I'm kind of like, well, I don't know. Why didn't it help? You know, let's do it again or let's try this. It's like, but if you measure those things, if you stain and you look at MGS scores and then that patient comes back like, well, it didn't do any benefit. It's like, well, your speed score is half as significant as it was before.
Exactly.
You know, your MGS score is an 8 instead of a 2.
Yep.
Your staining is down to a 1 and your osmolarity and Flamidrime and lactoferrin is that it's like, they're all better.
Yeah.
So that all, sometimes all the patient needs to hear is that.
Exactly.
And they're like, oh great.
Maybe it
is.
Because they think about that one day when they had discomfort, right? And so they had that one day that things were crazy. And then I'll say, well, what about the other 10, 14 days? Oh, it's fine. And then you show them the numbers and they're like, oh, I guess we are moving in a positive direction.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Let's keep going, you know, or this is where we've plateaued and you're maintaining. So I think, but dry eye is so, it's not new, but it's constantly advancing. And it's kind of cumbersome sometimes to figure out where does this go? Do I need to have this? Where does this fit in my protocol? But I think we'll eventually get to the point where, like I said, with this lactoferrin, the IgE coming out, I think diagnostically, the tighter we do that, the more efficient and easy that is for us, then the treatment will be easy. Right now, we are also treatment-based, and this is because that's all we really had in front of us. We didn't have a lot of diagnostic, but now that we're going to have a lot more diagnostic, a lot easier to get it, costs come down on that. Then we can hone in or focus on eventually. I hope we'll get to these are the few things that we need, just like glaucoma. That's where I see it going. These are the bam, bam, bam you have. And then this is where they're going to get into this bucket. And this is the protocol that we're going to use. And so I can see it going there the more we have diagnostic ability. So that's where I get really excited about. Because when you get to the root, like you said, some of those intuitions that you have and you have those tests that help back that up, then that helps your confidence. So the more confident you are when you have those patients that say, I'm not better, they say, okay, we were going this path. There may be an indicator where we might not reach what we want, but that's okay. We have something else that we can do where we can pivot.
Yep.
So it's exciting times in the whole ocular surface, dry eye space. Definitely helps if you've been practicing. I'm not 25 years in, but around 18, 19, it gets where you're like, okay, I've got to figure out something to bring back the juices of excitement, you know?
Yeah. I'm glad that you did that. I think that, you know, I think that it's our patients deserve access to providers who have spent a lot of time thinking about how to manage them, how to speak to them, how to articulate different points, and also to like find solutions that work with them. You know, I've made this point before. I don't know that on the podcast, but you know, we always think about evidence-based medicine.
Yes.
And one of my good friends, Kyle Cloutey, who does stuff with iCode as well. He's integral and comprehensive optometry simplified. A couple years ago, we were talking and we were talking about evidence-based medicine and all of us think it's something that's different. You know, when we were trained, you think evidence-based medicine is just research papers.
Yes.
You know, you think about the pyramid of evidence and why that's so important, and it is important. But evidence-based medicine, when it was proposed in the mid-90s, actually was a Venn diagram, and it was an overlapping, basically three, we'll call them core values that overlapped. One was research, right? So the randomized placebo-controlled trial.
Yes.
Prospective trial. But then, or other papers that are in that realm. But then you have that overlapping with your clinical hunches. I like to call them clinical hunches, or clinical intuition, your experience. Also, to overlap that is the patient preference.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so that's evidence-based medicine. So it's not like I can just be like, well, the ocular hypertension treatment study says let's do this and that and this. It's like, I can say that. Yes. And it might make people think I'm really smart. But if a patient doesn't want an intervention that I think we should do, then it all falls flat. And I say all that to say that our patients deserve providers like yourself. And the worst thing that can happen is you burn out, you sell your practice, you figure out a path away, and you're no longer like helpful to them, right? And so, or helpful in the same ways. That doesn't mean that you can't be helpful as a consultant over here or talking to this person. Of course you can. You can help other doctors do better patient care. And I think you do some of that, quite a bit of that actually, or maybe you're going to start doing more. But I bring all that up to say is like, I love that you said, look, I love what I do. I have a duty to my patients. I've got a successful practice. I could keep doing this, but I'm not enjoying it as much anymore. And so where am I going to find the fire?
It takes a ton of guts. And then society, your family's going to be like, what are you doing? You know, even my husband, I was like, I'm seeing half patients. And he goes, make it make sense. Like, how is this going to work? Where's the math? You know, he's engineering numbers. And I'm like, I'm going to figure it out because I can't do this like this. You know, for the time frame that it's expected, you know, like this was about 5-6 years ago. And I was looking ahead, like I was young then, but now I'm even closer to 50, I'm mid 40s. And I'm like, there's no way I can get to 65 doing this, let alone 55. And so I did get a lot of like, you're crazy, what are you doing? And I had to step back to move forward, you know, and sometimes that takes guts and people will get, you know, like for instance, when I first started out, I had like 2,800 square feet. Who starts out with that, right? And
there's
so fixed cost, and it was just like a lot of stuff. And I was just like, I can't. And so I said, you know, I would say COVID was the best thing that happened to me, you know, and I ended up with COVID at some point, but it allowed everybody just kind of pause. And if there was a time to reinvent yourself, then that was the time to kind of come out of COVID a certain way. And that's what I really did. My lease was ending and, you know, I stepped back. And so I scaled down. I had scaled down. Things worked out perfectly. And now I'm looking to bloom in the direction that I want. So my practice is very different than what it was 5 to 8 years ago. But I'm seeing less patients. I'm more profitable. I work like 4.5 days, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, but it takes guts to do that. And you do have to recognize that you feel a certain way. Even what everybody sees on the outside, you're not happy and this is not going to work. And I'm going to do it. Everybody's going to look at me crazy. And that's why I got a lot of side eyes. And now my husband's like, I'm glad you did that. You know, I wouldn't have done it. It took a lot of guts. I kept thinking to myself, doesn't make sense. Help me make it make sense. And I just have, you know, a lot of faith. Like doesn't make a lot of sense right now, but I'm just going to keep walking and just doors will open, which they have. And so now I'm in a much better space. And just any doctors that are listening, you know, it's never too late to kind of just take a 180. It takes guts to do it and it may look crazy to everybody else. But if you know how you feel and you know how you want to feel, then just do what it takes to make it happen.
So there's a lot to unpack in that because there's all these uncertainties. You know, when I work with practices, there's all these what ifs. Well, Dr. Davison's awesome. You know, like she can do it. I can't do it. But when you really scratch the surface on really excellent docs, you know, There are these, I'm sure you had, like you're articulating some of the uncertainties that you had, like make it make sense. So you had the same uncertainties that I would have or that anybody else has. There's just a difference between the ones that won't act because of uncertainty versus people like you that will act with uncertainty. And most of that comes from figuring out how to understand the uncertainty, understand the ups and downs, and realize in some fashion, I don't know how you did it, and that's what I want to ask you, in some fashion, it's okay, here, I'm still going to be uncertain in this scenario, but I'm going to understand the potential upsides and downsides, and I control both. And so even though I can't guarantee this is going to be successful, I can clarify those variables so I can try to control for them. Am I accurate there? Did you follow a process for that as well?
Some of it at that time is, you know, I wish it was that black and white. Like it was one of those things that I just had a sense for within this was the time, you know, this is the time for me to do what I need to do. Like I said, COVID, it lease was at an end. COVID was happening. Everybody was shut down. Once I got past the fear of my practice shutting down, you know, I have no control of the situation. All I can do now is just really hone in and focus what I want to look like when this is over, because it's going to be over and I'm going to come out better. That's what I decided. And so it's kind of hard to explain. Even my husband, he's very practical. I'm the type of person, when this decides that this is what needs to happen, I'm going to jump. Right. And I know God's got me. I'm very faithful and I'm going to land on my 2 feet. My husband is he's the engineer. It has to make sense. He has to calculate how much he needs to run, how much he's calculating all that. And I'm already jumped. And so we balance each other very well, because I've pulled him to be less rigid and step out on faith. And I always say, once your back is against the wall, things that you can't see, your brain will kick in. It's that fight or flight. It's going to figure out how to make it happen. So who do I need to call? What class do I need to take? What do I need to research? Do I need to stay up late? You're going to figure it all out, which I've done. And this helmet is like foggy, right? And so it's very hard, but I'm one of those individuals where when I get an urge, it's time to move, then I move. Like I have a nonprofit. Something came over me, was like, you need to do a nonprofit. There are girls that need exposure who look like you. I did that in 2017 and it was just like, I had made it happen. And so it's one of those things where sometimes you can calculate, you can control those variables. Most of the time you can't. And that's what faith is called, right? A lot of times I don't see it. I'm calculating. It just doesn't make sense. But something's telling you within, if you're going to get where you want to be, this is the time that you need to move. And once you step out there, now that I've jumped, right? And so I have to assume that my parachute is going to work and I just got to pull the lever, right? And so once your back is against the wall, then you figure it out. And that's why I tell my husband, sometimes you have to get uncomfortable, because it's going to help you find those resources that you couldn't necessarily think of or find when you're comfortable being mediocre, right? And so, or comfortable being unhappy, right? And I got uncomfortable with my situation. I said, this is it. I love seeing kids and things like that, but it was too much. It was just taking over my practice. I wasn't a pediatric doctor. There was a certain vision I had for my practice, and that vision wasn't coming to life 5-6 years down the line. And so it's okay. My patients are okay. I found a great pediatric doctor that I send them to. That doctor does not like dry eye, and we work in tandem. That's one of my big referral sources, because she's in our happy place. And those patients, she sends them to me because she knows they're my happy place. We both do primary care, so I see kids to a certain extent and things like that. But when they need binocular vision, things like that, or myopia management, I'm sending them to her, and I'm okay with that, because I know they're gonna have a great doctor, and she does the same. And so it's one of those things where I wish it was that cut and dry, and I would be sitting up here lying if I said, oh yeah, I controlled every variable. Some of the variables I had control, some of them, most of them I didn't. And as I walked that path, different doors will open up. You'll meet certain individuals. I had to get my equipment moved from one location. I'm like, how am I gonna do this? You reach out to a friend, oh, I just did that. This person will come move your equipment for you. Buying, like during COVID, like I said, it was the best time. I've never got a grant in my life, right? COVID, patients were recommending me for grants. And I will fill it out. I'm like, I never win anything. I was just like, why am I getting all these grants? I'm like, what is different now? But doors just start to open when you decide, when you get layers or focused on, this is what you're going to do. And I need to figure out how to make it happen. Like I said, I was filling out grant applications, and I got a grant through my county. And like I said, I've never won anything. I'm one of those people like, I'm not going to win. And I at least got 5 different grants during that time frame that patients recommended for me. Or I started to research grants I never did before. And I said, I'm going to fill it out. And doors just opened. So like I said, I didn't have control of a lot of the variables. The ones that I could, I did. And the ones that I couldn't, I just kept doing what I needed to do.
Well, I think that's my point, is you figured out you were going to be uncertain, and uncertainty can either paralyze you, or you can decide to figure out where those uncertainties lie and realize, like, I got to step in the right direction, and I'll figure the next thing out. The other thing I love that you said, and I'll let you finish up with just chatting a bit about your nonprofit, because I didn't know that, if you'd like. But the other thing you said that I think is really important that I know people probably understand, it's not hugely, you know, like groundbreaking, but what I've realized is you can be uncomfortable. You're going to be uncomfortable no matter what you do. You can be uncomfortable with being unhappy. You can be uncomfortable with getting up in the morning and your bones ache because you didn't work out,
yeah.
Or you can be uncomfortable because you did work out and your mm-hmm. muscles ache, right? Like you just got to pick it. And some of the discomforts, like why do you do the stuff you do? It's like, well, I'm going to be uncomfortable either way. I'd rather be uncomfortable moving in the direction I want to go than be uncomfortable and being frustrated, not going any place. So I love that's something that you just said, look, it's uncomfortable. My back's against the wall, but I'm going to change it.
And I think you said too about fear paralyzing you. I think that's what a lot of people get stumbled on is the fear. And I want to say all this was happening. It doesn't mean I wasn't fearful. Like there have been days, even now, like, what in the world was I?
Yes.
Thinking?
Yes.
You second guess.
Yeah, I think the same thing.
Exactly. But the fear, you have to fail. Right. And so when you try to strive for perfection, the fear paralyzes you even more, right?
Yes.
So when you're fearful, but you have failed and overcome, then that helps with the fear. So even though I will get fearful in things that I'm doing, I'll say, well, you've been in situations like this or even worse, and look where you ended up, right? You came out even better. And so that helps to subside the fear. So that's for patients, people where you just can't. Perfection is not the key. You know, there are going to be times that you fail. It's just how you fail and what do you do with the failure, which helps you to better react when you're fearful, right? And so everybody's going to be encounter fear and whatever, you know, especially if you're doing some entrepreneurial things, it can be very fearful. Even now, like even getting this thing open, it was one day I just sat there. I'm like, what in the world am I doing? Like, this is insane. I have another practice. I have these kids. What am I doing? And then I just say, okay, calm down, take a deep breath, go outside, take a walk, come back, because you're not going to let the fear paralyze you. You got to figure out how to make this situation better, be resourceful. And so I think that's the key. The fear is there, but don't let it paralyze you and don't strive for perfection, because you have to fail, right? Failure is okay in some things. So that way you can realize, guess what? I'm not dead. I'm still here. I'm okay. My thing, as long as you're not dead, you're good. So I tell my kids, when they are, I'm like, are you dead? And they're like, no. I'm like, okay, well, if you're not dead, you have another opportunity, you know?
Dr. Davison, there's no better way to finish up with that. Would you come back on? Would you come back and talk to me another time?
Yeah.
All right. So tell the audience where they can find out more about you. If you want to mention, you know, maybe we even talk about your nonprofit for an entire episode.
Okay, yeah.
Where can people find out about you?
So I'm on all social media platforms at Dr. Janelle OD. So LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. So you can start there, and any other thing that you want to link to, you can. I'm very responsive. So if you DM me, I'll get back to you. Send me an email. I'll respond to you. I'm pretty down home, just like I'm talking to him here. That's with my patients, with I'm everybody's sister girl. So I'll be your friend too, if you need me to.
All right. Awesome. Well, Dr. Davison, thanks so much for being on. I really appreciate it. It's been a ton of fun.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.